Challenge Cyber Defense.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber decryption. It's now.
So, time destroys everything it creates. We don't break the rules, we rewrite them. Expect LunarSec.
Yeah, that is quite the entrance, isn't it? I mean, it reads less like a standard hacker's ransom note and, you know, much more like a psychological manifesto.
It really does. And to put that quote into perspective for you listening, I want you to imagine you're tasked with protecting this impenetrable fortress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you build walls 100 feet high, you dig a moat, you install state-of-the-art surveillance cameras.
Oh, right. The works.
Exactly. You are standing on the parapets, looking outward, waiting for the battering ram. But the adversary, they don't bring a battering ram. Instead, they stand perfectly out of range, and they just start whispering to the guards.
Oh.
Right. They don't attack the stone. Mm. They attack the psychology of the people inside the castle.
Which is arguably the ultimate vulnerability. I mean, you can patch a server, you can upgrade a firewall, but human trust, perception, fear, those are infinitely harder to secure.
Yeah. And that dynamic is exactly what we are unpacking in today's deep dive. We are looking at an emerging, highly psychological hacktivist collective known as LunarSec.
Yes.
But before we get into the mechanics of those whispers, I need to lay out the framework for how we even know what they are whispering in the first place. So this deep dive is presented by the Cyber Intelligence Bureau, which is a division of the Orange Cyber Defense Epidemiology Laboratory.
Right.
Their approach combines OSINT techniques and human evidence, such as investigations of cyber activities, including emotional, intelligence, cognitive, and geopolitical analysis of the influences of cyber threats.
And we should probably clarify a couple of those terms for you. HUMINT refers to human intelligence.
Yeah.
That's analyzing the actual human behaviors, networks, and motivations behind the keyboards. And OSINT is open source intelligence. It's really crucial to understand that all the information we're discussing today is the result of these open source investigations of cyber origin.
Yeah, exactly.
So we are drawing from public materials that the Bureau has meticulously, you know, correlated, validated, and qualified as trusted sources.
Right. This is an analysis from a strictly cyber perspective.
Yeah.
And I want to emphasize that the entire report we're drawing from strictly respects the principle of neutrality.
Absolutely.
We are not taking any political sides today. We're merely reporting the factual findings of this research to help you understand the landscape of a modern cyber threat.
Yeah, that neutrality is fundamental. We are simply observing the chessboard here.
So let's look at the adversary on this chessboard. The mission today is to explore how LunarSec attacks the human mind just as effectively as they attack digital infrastructure.
Yes.
To start, the report leans heavily into emotional and cognitive intelligence. Why are analysts mapping the psychology of an anonymous internet group instead of just, I don't know, reverse engineering their malicious code?
Well, because the code is almost secondary to the objective here. To truly understand a group like LunarSec, you have to look at the cognitive footprint they leave behind. The analysts are mapping the adversary's mindset to understand the why behind the what. So based on the intelligence, LunarSec operates heavily on nationalist sentiments and post-colonial grievances.
Right.
They lean into this Algerian diaspora networking narrative. But what's truly fascinating is how they perceive themselves. They do not project the image of a chaotic criminal syndicate.
Really? What do they project?
They frame themselves as white hat vigilantes. In their own words, they're a correction to a negligent system.
Hold on, let me make sure I'm conceptualizing this correctly. This sounds less like dusting a crowbar for fingerprints to find a burglar, and more like psychoanalyzing the highly emotional manifesto that the burglar left taped to your broken window.
Yes.
Like, we're analyzing what they want the world to think of them.
That is a brilliant way to frame it. The crowbar is just a tool of convenience. The manifesto reveals the ultimate goal. And the way analysts gather this manifesto isn't by, you know, finding us a paper. It's through SIGINT, or signals intelligence profiling.
So what does SIGINT actually look like here? Are analysts just reading the group's public Twitter feed and making assumptions?
No, it goes much deeper than just reading tweets. SIGINT in this context involves monitoring the group's communication signals across platforms.
Like where?
Primarily their public Telegram channels and their X accounts, formerly Twitter, to study their digital footprint in high resolution. Analysts look at the metadata of their behavior.
Oh, I see.
Like, when do they post? What specific vocabulary do they use to claim responsibility? How do they build alliances?
Do they have alliances?
They do. For example, the intelligence reveals Lunarisec is actively building a massive coalition called the SnowSec Alliance.
FixSec.
Yeah, where they team up with other hacktivist groups like BD Anonymous and NullSec. That tells analysts this isn't just an isolated cell, it's an organized movement trying to franchise its ideology.
Well, so they build a profile based on these signals. Once they have that psychological profile, how do they weaponize it? Because the research shows they don't just steal data and run.
Right, they don't.
They wage psychological warfare using specific influence tactics.
Yeah, they are absolute masters of the hook. And their most prominent hooking technique is what we call the white hat illusion. They frequently use a tactic known in the industry as responsible disclosure.
Meaning they find a vulnerability and actually tell the victim about it.
Correct. They will find a critical security flaw in a major system. We saw this with the French legal platform digitalavocat.fr and the French government tax site impots.gov.fr.
Okay.
Instead of immediately exploiting the flaw to quietly siphon out data, they publicly warn the target.
Wait, let me push back on that because that sounds completely counterintuitive for a threat actor. If they warn the government about a flaw, aren't they just giving up their leverage? Or is this like a Trojan horse of goodwill?
It is absolutely a Trojan horse. It's an incredibly sophisticated use of public relations to mask a cyber threat. There's a foundational concept in psychology from a researcher named Robert Cialdini.
Oh, it's Cialdini, right?
Yeah. Back in 1984, he published landmark work on the psychology of persuasion, specifically outlining how authority and reciprocity work in the human brain.
Okay, so how does Cialdini's reciprocity apply to a hacker group on Telegram?
Well, by publicly reporting the flaw, Lunarisec triggers that reciprocity loop. The underlying psychological message is, we helped you secure your citizens' data, now you owe us respect.
Man, that's clever.
It builds this aura of legitimacy. It makes them look like an established authority. That way, when they do launch a destructive attack later, they've already manipulated the public into seeing them not as petty thieves, but as a legitimate oversight body that was, you know, finally pushed too far by state incompetence.
They're essentially hacking the public's perception before they even touch the actual network.
Exactly. And they compound this with a technique called cognitive framing. The analysts draw a direct line here to the work of Daniel Kahneman,
the Nobel laureate.
Right. He wrote Thinking Fast and Slow. Specifically, they look at his 2011 research on prospect theory.
Okay. Prospect theory basically argues that human beings are neurologically wired to fear a loss much more than we value an equivalent gain, right?
Yeah.
Like we hate losing things.
Yes. And Lunarisec uses that to frame their narrative. They don't frame their actions as a hack. They frame it as a fight against the negligence of the state.
Oh, wow.
By focusing the narrative entirely on the loss of public trust and the negligence of the target, they shape the public conversation to actively shame the victims. Suddenly, the government or the corporation is the bad guy for leaving your data unprotected, rather than the hacker being the bad guy for stealing it.
So they shift the blame entirely. But the report goes even deeper into how they communicate this. It mentions neurolinguistic programming or NLP and propaganda.
Yes.
Now, I have to be honest. When I hear NLP, I usually think of like overly aggressive 1980s sales seminars trying to subliminally convince you to buy a vacuum cleaner. How is a hacktivist group using that?
It's a very fair question, and the reality is much more insidious than a sales pitch. The intelligence report references a 2015 scientific publication by R. Torok on symbiotic radicalization strategies and NLP propaganda tools.
Yeah.
Lunarisec uses this by blending incredibly dry, verifiable technical claims with highly emotional, ideological calls to action.
Give me an example of what that looks like for the listener. If I'm scrolling their Telegram channel, what am I actually reading?
Well, you might see a post that says, exposed database found at this IP address due to an unpatched vulnerability.
Okay, standard tech stuff.
Right. That's a verifiable technical fact. Your brain reads it, verifies it, and accepts it as truth. But immediately following that technical truth, they use embedded commands and pacing, slipping in an ideological statement like, the colonial system is corrupt and failing its people. Join the resistance.
Oh, I see. Because I just accepted the first technical statement as an objective truth, my brain is neurologically primed to let its guard down. And then I just accept this second, highly politicized statement. The technical truth is just the delivery mechanism for the radicalization.
That is the symbiotic radicalization Torok wrote about. They weave religious phrasing, quotes about justice, and appeals to geopolitical conflicts like invoking solidarity with Palestine or anti-colonial struggles in Algeria seamlessly into data dumps.
That's intense.
It is. The technical prowess validates their ideology, and the ideology fuels their technical recruitment. It's designed to recruit sympathizers while simultaneously demoralizing their targets.
Okay, so we've established they have a masterclass approach to psychological operations, but let's transition to the actual execution here.
Sure.
If they've built this massive psychological army of sympathizers who are primed to distrust the government, how do they actually hand that army digital pitchforks? Are they using highly sophisticated, custom-built malware? Are they buying zero-day exploits on the dark web?
This is where we see a fascinating contradiction in their profile. While their psychological game is top tier, their cyber tactics are not actually reliant on highly sophisticated, custom-built malware.
Really?
Yeah, they aren't spending months developing complex viruses. Instead, they rely heavily on web application vulnerabilities. They are looking for the absolute lowest hanging fruit.
Let's break down that digital arsenal, because the report lists a lot of acronyms here. It mentions IDOR.
Mm-hmm.
What is an insecure direct object reference in plain English?
Think of IDOR like staying in a hotel. The front desk hands you a key for room 101. You go upstairs, but you notice the room numbers are just written on the keys in dry erase marker.
Okay.
So you wipe off the 1, write a 2, and realize your key now opens room 102. An IDOR vulnerability is when a web application doesn't properly check if you actually have permission to view the data you're asking the server to show you.
You just change a number.
Literally, just change a simple number in the web address, and suddenly you are looking at someone else's account.
That is terrifyingly simple. The report also mentions exploiting exposed APIs. Now, an API is basically a digital waiter that takes orders between different software systems, right?
That's a great analogy. The API is the waiter taking your order to the kitchen. But an exposed API means that waiter isn't checking if you are the restaurant owner.
Oh, no.
Yeah. You ask the waiter for the restaurant's entire financial ledger, and because the API is misconfigured, the waiter just hands it to you. LunarSec aggressively scans for these misconfigurations.
Wow.
They also look for exposed databases like Supabase. It's the equivalent of a company leaving a filing cabinet full of citizen data sitting on the sidewalk overnight.
What about the attacks on the French tax site? The report mentions a blind SQL injection. How does that work without just asking the waiter for the ledger?
So a database is queried using a language called SQL. If a website isn't secured properly, a hacker can slip their own SQL commands into a simple search box. But a blind SQL injection is trickier. The database doesn't show you the data on the screen. Instead, it's like passing a note under a locked door to a guard, asking a true or false question.
Like what?
Like, is the first letter of the password an A? If the guard slips a note back quickly, it's true. If they delay, it's false. By automating millions of these true-false questions, LunarSec can extract sensitive data without ever seeing the database directly.
That requires patience. But again, it relies on someone leaving a theoretical crack under the door.
Exactly.
The last one listed is XSS, or cross-site scripting, which they claimed against the French Ministry of Health.
Cross-site scripting is like a hacker walking up to a trusted public bulletin board in the town square, say, the Ministry of Health website, and pinning a fake notice over an official one.
Yeah.
When a citizen comes to read the board, that fake notice secretly steals their session cookies or redirects them to a malicious site. The citizen trusts the board, so they fall for the trap.
Let me synthesize this. It sounds like they aren't necessarily blowing up the bank vault with dynamite. They are just walking around the city, rattling doorknobs, finding doors that someone forgot to lock, and then loudly announcing to the world that the door was open.
That is the essence of their strategy. It is overwhelmingly about public humiliation and the erosion of trust. And when we look at who they are targeting, the geopolitical motivation becomes glaringly obvious. Their primary focus is France, which ties directly back to those anti-colonial and nationalist narratives we mapped in their psychological profile.
And they are hitting highly symbolic sectors. Let's talk about education. They have targeted major French universities, the University of Toulouse, the University of Bourgogne, Aix-Marseille University.
Yes.
In the Aix-Marseille incident, they exposed thousands of student and staff records. Think about that for a second if you're listening. It's one thing to hear about a faceless government agency getting hacked. It is entirely different to know your child's university records are being weaponized.
It creates a very visceral sense of insecurity. It broadcasts a message to the average citizen that the state cannot even protect its students, its future leaders, or its research institutions.
Right. And what else are they targeting?
They also heavily target the government and legal sectors. We mentioned digitalavocat.fr earlier. That wasn't just a simple warning. They allegedly exposed over 132,000 records of lawyers and their clients.
Wow.
We are talking about highly privileged personal, financial, and administrative data. They also targeted service-civic.gugu.fr, a site dedicated to national service.
Which strikes right at the heart of the justice system and the concept of civic duty. They are choosing targets that maximize the psychological damage to the state's authority.
And they are escalating. They've moved into the defense sector. They made claims against MBDA Systems, which is a major European missile manufacturer, alleging they exposed 270,000 records.
A missile manufacturer.
Yeah. Now, we must note that the severity of the exfiltrated data can sometimes be exaggerated by the group for PR purposes, but the geopolitical ambition is undeniable. They are trying to signal to the world that they can touch the European military-industrial complex.
So we have a group that uses low-level, opportunistic technical exploits, you know, rattling doorknobs and asking the database true-false questions. But they amplify those simple technical wins with top-tier psychological warfare, PR manipulation, and deep geopolitical grievances.
Right.
Where does the Cyber Intelligence Bureau see this heading? Like, what's the end game here?
The CIB has developed two main hypotheses regarding future European targets. We have to look at what this potent combination of cyber exploitation and human manipulation really means for the future of security.
Let's start with the first one. What is the most likely outcome?
The first is what the CIB calls the most probable hypothesis, internally dubbed Vuln Harvest. This envisions a scenario of a sustained, low-level campaign of disclosures against the French and wider EU public and private sector.
It's just an ongoing thing.
Yeah. Using automated scanning tools, they continuously find those unlocked doors, the misconfigured APIs, the exposed SUPA-based databases.
Like a slow bleed of data.
Precisely. They find the flaws, and then they amplify their claims through their massive alliance networks, like SNOSEC. The goal here isn't a single catastrophic blow that takes down the power grid.
What is it then?
The aim is to cause constant regulatory drag, minor but accumulating economic costs, and most importantly, to normalize a phenomenon we call hacktivism fatigue.
Hacktivism fatigue. That is a brilliant term. It essentially means we, as the public, just get so used to our data being leaked and our institutions being embarrassed on Telegram that we stop trusting the system entirely, but we also become completely numb to the attacks.
Exactly.
It just becomes background noise.
It reinforces their narrative of state vulnerability perfectly, but it does so without crossing the red line that would trigger a massive coordinated military or intelligence retaliation from the targeted nations. It's a slow, methodical war of attrition on public confidence.
Okay, that is the most probable scenario. What is the second hypothesis? The one that represents the worst case scenario.
That is the most dangerous hypothesis, referred to as the lunaris eclipse. This envisions a coordinated, highly strategic supply chain compromise.
A supply chain attack. So instead of attacking the government castle directly, they hike up into the mountains and poison the river that feeds the castle.
That is exactly the mechanism. In this scenario, they don't just deface a government website or leak student emails. They target the underlying software vendors that supply the French legal or defense sectors. Yeah. They use zero-day vulnerabilities or exploit common misconfigurations in these vendors to secretly exfiltrate data over a long period. Then, instead of releasing it piecemeal to build their brand, they time massive aggregated data dumps.
They release it all at once to maximize the shock and awe. What would be the fallout of something on that scale?
The impact would be devastating across multiple vectors. We are talking about triggering a massive privacy crisis, billions in economic losses due to legal fallout, and sudden defense vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
We would likely see widespread social unrest fueled directly by their NLP propaganda networks amplifying the panic. It could even lead to severe interstate cyber tensions if the public demands action. The psychological multiplier here is the paranoia.
Right, because nobody feels safe.
Exactly. If the public believes that a hostile hacktivist group has permanent unseen eyes inside their legal system and their defense contractors, trust in those fundamental institutions completely evaporates.
It is a chilling strategic vision. You know, we started this deep dive by talking about fortresses and whispers. We've seen how LunariSec operates, not by breaking the strongest encryption or writing the most complex malware, but by exploiting the simplest human flaws.
Yeah.
They exploit how we configure our web servers, yes, but more importantly, they exploit how our brains process fear, authority, and trust. They are rewriting the rules of engagement, turning public relations, cognitive biases, and psychological framing into actual weapons of mass disruption.
And it serves as a stark reminder. As long as our digital systems are built by humans, configured by humans, and defended by humans, that psychological attack surface will always be there waiting to be hooked.
Which leaves you, the listener, with a lingering and frankly unsettling question to mull over as you go about your day. We know how to patch a database. We know how to secure an API. But if the ultimate target of a modern cyber attack isn't just a government server, but human psychology and public trust itself, wait, how exactly do we go about installing a firewall in the human mind?
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber decryption. We'll be talking about it on this channel very soon.
Orange Cyber Defense.